WGH Radio.
And a very good Thursday afternoon to you fine folks. Yes, that's I, Adam, and I am now live in the studio on South Prospect Street here at The Talking Place, WWGH Online Radio, presenting to you fine programming from many different perspectives, some fascinating members of the species, Homo sapiens. And of course, if I'm the person behind the microphone, you can definitely expect a surprise or two, and certainly expect your funny bone to be tickled at least every 2.71 minutes. Very pleased to have a guest in the studio today, someone I've always wanted to share the microphones with. He was on with Charlie for a long time. Then he was on with Glenn, and Glenn has kind of gone into retirement, which is well-deserved. But fortunately or unfortunately, I have not rung the retirement bell as of yet. So you are stuck with me until 1 p.m. That's 12 p.m. Central. But I can assure you this will be fun. And again, it'll be educational. And one thing about this area, you know, Marion and Mid-Ohio in general, of course, it's a biased opinion. But this arguably is one of the most underrated areas in the state, in the country, and even in the universe. Many reasons for that. Lots of history. We have our living legend, Mary Ellen Withrow. She has a big event coming up on October 2nd, and good friend of the station, someone I've been privileged to meet and can call at least a casual friend. Of course, we have the Warren G. Harding presidency, his residence, his starting of the Marion Star, and all kinds of stuff that's talked about, including the missing dog collar and the $5,000 reward. But something that's current and has been available to you as a resident, business owner, or visitor of Mid-Ohio is our wonderful flora and fauna, the animals. I mean, many of whom are much tamer and friendlier than they might look. The plants, the weeds, the fact that we have four distinct seasons, and we're very lucky to have a gentleman who is pretty much a walking encyclopedia on that stuff. He has been interested in the natural species, plant, animal, and otherwise that inhabit our great area ever since he knew what species were. And he has continued to increase his knowledge. He's helped interns better their knowledge. And maybe best of all, he has been such a great friend to this station. And so I bring to you Mr. James Anderson, live in the studio right across from me. And if you do have questions about the flora and fauna in this great land, feel free to call, because I can assure you with James here, it is unlikely that the question would go unanswered. And if you want me to try to answer the question, well, make sure it's an easy one. My knowledge certainly is not as extensive. So, James, it's a pleasure to have you in the studio with me. Again, I've always wanted to share the microphones with you, and let's hope this is, again, fun, educational, and we do giggle quite a bit. With the fall season approaching us, you know, school seems to start earlier every year. It started after Labor Day when I was a kid, and now it seems like it starts a month after July 4th. We've had some cool weather of late. We're seeing the sun go down a minute or two earlier every day. How are things looking as we transition into fall in the flora and fauna department?
So it depends on what you're looking for. So some of our migratory warblers are starting to travel down to South America, and right now they are in their fall plumage. So they are not very bright or attractive, because that's the goal for the spring, to obviously attract the female.
That sounds like some of our politicians, not very bright or attractive.
Yeah.
Told you, you're going to laugh at least every 2 minutes when I'm on the air here.
Yeah. So, so yes, the fall migratory birds, they're traveling through, and a lot of them look like, both the male and the females look very alike. A lot of our fall or early or late summer wildflower species are out. I was just actually at the Beaver Wildlife Area before I came here, and still got a lot of great prairie remnant plants that are still in bloom, and some starting to come out. And today I brought with me a deceased monarch and a little milkweed plant that I found at Marion Tallgrass Trail. So I really wanted to talk about them today because I don't know if you've been paying attention, but unfortunately the monarch was just put on the endangered species list this year.
I did not know that. They're beautiful.
And they are.
And again, when I was a kid, maybe it shows my age, they were fairly plentiful. We would remember we would catch one, put a, hate to sound morbid, but put a pin through it and preserve it.
Yeah.
Because they are colorful and they were rather plentiful. I did not know they were now endangered. And
yes.
That's kind of troubling.
It is.
I remember looking around and they were all over the place and they are just gorgeous.
Yeah, I mean, kind of go along with you. When I was a kid, I mean, it was very common to see monarchs fly all around and see them in great numbers. And I have noticed in the last few years, you know, it has, their sightings have definitely have decreased. And even seems like this year, they got a late start. They didn't, or at least in the Marion area, I didn't see them, didn't arrive until about mid to late July. And usually they're here in the Marion area about late May, early June. So I don't know what was the delay. This one I found at one of my parks several years ago. I haven't put it in my insect box collection, but I just carry along when I do any butterfly monarch program, especially with kids and what.
You must have quite a collection of members of the animal kingdom.
Oh yes,
at the Anderson residence.
Oh yes, you could say that again. I have a lot of skulls and pelts and fake poop and some real poop in jars. So yeah, it's quite a fun.
We are broadcasting a live Facebook video. If you are a Facebook friend of mine, feel free to click on the button that says Adam Lepp is live now, and you will see my somewhat smiling face behind the microphone, and James is across from me. I want to thank Arturo and Duff for watching. Again, if you have a question for James, question about wildlife, maybe in your backyard or wherever else, this is the chance to spew forth the questions. We're not going to make you swipe your credit card through your phone or tap to pay with Apple Pay. It is completely free of charge. James does not mind his brain being strained, but pretty much you can count on the fact that if you ask a question about the flora and or fauna of this area, he's going to know the answer. In fact, probably give you more information than you even expected. 740-383-WWGH. Now, James, you've been taking on an intern, and it seems like he posts a lot to Facebook. Jonah is, I believe, his name.
Yes, yep.
Not the Jonah in the Bible, because he was swallowed by a whale.
That's right.
This is Jonah of Marion.
Yep.
He gives a lot of seminars. Is he kind of like the mini-me? He'll be, 20 years from now, 10, 20 years from now, he will have the wealth of knowledge that you will?
I hope so, yeah.
He seems very active.
Yes, he is. He was a very, very good intern this summer. Sadly, we lost him last Saturday. That was his last day. So he's actually a senior in high school. He goes to Pleasant. And then he's still a senior there, but he does college prep classes through Marion Tech.
So people learned quite a bit from him.
Oh, yeah.
He had good attendance at his events, too.
Yeah, I've heard, especially when he brings in his live animals, I have heard a lot of people usually came for that. And his one pond study, he had about 8 people. So I was very pleased with him, and I really wish the best of luck. And sometimes I reach out to him because he actually has his own YouTube channel about how to take care of domestic exotic reptile species. And so he shows how to care for them and if they're sick, what to do. So I actually use him as a resource.
Sure, take your rattlesnake to the veterinarian. Why not?
Oh, yeah. He doesn't have rattlesnake, but it, like turtles and geckos and things like that. So.
Gecko, the Geico mascot.
Yes, right. Yep.
We do see a lot of the garter snakes. Garters are technically harmless, but I mean the bite's not gonna hurt an adult person.
No, I'll feel like
we
a
do
pinch.
See a lot of snakes and the turtles and frogs.
Oh yeah.
In this area, and I've asked you about what we would find even here, just south of downtown.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, they're masters of disguise. You're not just going to see a garter snake or a turtle just minding its business if you go in the yard. Yeah, you have to look for them.
Yes, absolutely. Now, with the weather that's cooling down, I will admit, with Marion Tallgrass Trail, since it's a blacktop trail, some of our slithery friends will utilize it. So the garter and brown snakes are the most common species, but you may see some of our other species, the water snake and the black rat and the milk snake. They look bigger, they look scarier, but they are harmless. And like I tell people, if you leave them alone, they'll leave you alone.
They're more afraid of you than you are of them.
Exactly.
We don't really have copperheads here. They're southeast. You might see one or two, but they're big in southeastern Ohio and West Virginia.
Now, the one we do have in Marion County, and it's only been in very, very small numbers, but in the northern part of the county, the Eastern Mosaga, or also known as the pygmy rattlesnake. So if you're up in the Morrill region, especially if you're close to the Kildare Plains wildlife area, you may come across those rattlesnakes. And that's actually where they are the most abundant in the state of Ohio, is in Kildare.
Oh, that is fascinating. Now, they are poisonous, and you want to avoid them. They're not quite as, let's say, bad as the ones you'd see in Arizona or Texas. But they're not quite as human-friendly as the garter or brown snakes.
Yes. Now, kind of keep that in mind. Even if you get bit by a garter snake, everybody's immune system is different. I could be fine, but if you got bit and you had a very weak immune system, you could get sick because they do carry bacteria. And I had a friend, he suffers from that, and he got bit by a garter, and he had an infection in his arm.
Yeah, I'd read that they are technically venomous, but again, most people, it's like a pinprick.
Yeah,
and again, just like with a bee or a spider, it just depends on your body chemistry.
Yes, absolutely, yeah.
But they are fascinating, beautiful, beautiful animals.
Oh, they are.
On the Tallgrass Trail, you're pretty much the person that the go-to person for questions and for event coordination.
Yes, absolutely.
We would expect less going on as the snow develops and it gets colder. But it is a 12-month-a-year event. And I would think in the winter, maybe some things that are more exciting about it, especially if it's a warmer day, you can certainly see more because the trees aren't covered with leaves.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, on a relatively warm January day, you know, where it gets to 40 or 50, and that happens several days out of the year.
Yeah.
How would that differ from a hike that you might take in the middle of July where it's 90 degrees and humid?
So you may find some snakes, and sometimes turtles. They'll take advantage of that warm spot, and they might utilize it for a bit. The animals are definitely going to be more active. Like, you may see a lot more squirrels coming about. And then with more little animals roaming about than predators, such as owls, like the short-eared owl, northern harrier, which is a winter bird. And again, if you go around Tallgrass or Big Island, those guys are really cool. They are from Canada, but they migrate to Ohio in the wintertime.
Yeah, owls are fascinating.
They're
associated with intelligence and just a little mysterious with their hoo noise. And, you know, woodsy owl, the owl and the pussycat, they're commonly used in the media, but again, they have the aura of mystery.
Yeah.
And again, like the bald eagle, they are beautiful animals.
Did you know, it's actually funny what you just mentioned about the whole wisdom thing? They're actually, if you had a scale from the most intelligent to the least intelligent, guess who would be the most or the least intelligent?
Yeah, I'm sure it's a trick question.
It's owls, because their eyes make up about 80 to 90% of their skull space, only leaves about 10 to 20% left. So they're actually not very smart.
Well, I did not know that.
Yeah.
I mean, I know, you know, you hear the expression bird brain, and that birds aren't the most intelligent creatures. You know, I heard like my mom, I'm not sure if this was true, it's an old wives' tale maybe, my mom said a chicken is so dumb it would just stand out in the rain and the cold until it freezes to death.
I've heard something similar to that,
and,
yeah.
And, you know, and turkeys, they aren't too bright.
Yeah.
But are there some bird species that are a little more intelligent? I guess sneaky with great instinct, like a cat or a dog. I mean, because you realize there are dogs that are smarter than a lot of people.
Crows and blue jays are actually in the same family, and they're very intelligent.
I heard crows, they kind of remember, like...
They do. They
if you do something mean, they remember, like, 10, 15 years later.
Yeah, they recognize faces. But parrots are probably the most intelligent.
Oh, yeah, they talk better than some politicians.
That's right. And some can do puzzles. So
parrots.
Yeah, some parrots, like the African gray parrot, I think that's the most intelligent. It's as smart as a toddler, so.
That's fascinating. So, interestingly, you would think birds, the parrots, the macaws, I guess a macaw is technically a kind of a parrot.
Yeah, yeah.
The minor bird, they would be very intelligent because they can talk. And they can mimic people, and they can even make fun of you.
Yeah.
I mean, you might see it on TV where, you know, the husband says something about the wife, and, you know, and you know, say, you know, I can't stand her dress. And then the wife walks in and says, I can't stand your dress. And so you kind of see that. But they actually do that.
They're like sponges.
And it's almost like they're sneaky enough to know, what can I say to aggravate somebody? Just to have fun. Just to be delightfully naughty. And so that isn't too surprising. But no, until this day, James, I did not know that owls were considered to be the least intelligent of the birds. So maybe a bit of an irony with how they're used, how they're used in media. Adam Lepp here on The Talking Place, WWGH Radio, broadcasting a live Facebook video. I want to thank my cousin Eileen for watching. Another gentleman named Adam who's in Nevada, and a gentleman named Thomas, I believe he's in New York City, for watching. That's what's cool about the internet.
You can be almost
anywhere in the world, yes, including from good old Marion, OH. James Anderson, our naturalist extraordinaire, the world booker from modern times, Google, of flora and fauna. Now, of course, James, you're probably tired of hearing this question because you've been on with us so many times, but I would be correct in that ever since you knew what flora and fauna are, what nature was, what other species besides Homo sapiens were about, you've been into this.
Yes.
Since you were a small child. Have you always wanted to be a naturalist? Did you think maybe, okay, a science teacher or just a hobby, but I'll get a job as an accountant or something more traditional? Or did you envision yourself, you know, 30 years old, with a family, being a naturalist, even one that goes on the radio? Is that something that you're kind of living out as a childhood thought? Or did your career maybe take a bit of a turn?
Actually, I did not get into the whole nature naturalist thing until I was in college.
Oh.
Most of my childhood was in southern Delaware County, like the Polaris region, and we lived on a farm. And I was there before all Polaris was developed, when Polaris was still woods and or farmland area, and that was the environment I was in. But then we moved out into the Richwood area there in Union County, and when I was in FFA, which is Future Farmers of America, I was involved in the contest, the wildlife contest, and I really loved that contest, and I really wanted to pursue a degree in natural resources. So I asked my ag teacher, and I said, what can I do? And he says, why don't you go down to Hocking College? They got some great programs. Well, when I first signed up for Hocking, the first thing I wanted to do was a wildlife officer, a game warden. Because I said, oh, you got a badge and gun and tell people what to do, you know, no hunting and fishing. But then after I went there, I actually changed the major into wildlife management. And that's actually what my two wildlife degrees are in wildlife management and wildlife fishery conservation management from Hocking College in Rio Grande. And then my first internship was actually environmental education in Kentucky. And then I'm like, oh, this is what I really want to do. So the moral of this whole story is you have to try new things because you never know where your feet might land.
So definitely it took a bit of a turn as you became a young adult.
Yes. Now, my son, I mean, he's 7 years old, and he knows things I didn't know until I was in my 20s.
Yeah, just seeing your Facebook posts, he definitely, talk about a mini-me.
Yeah.
Maybe five or six more years, and
he might have my job.
Yeah, he may be taking over.
I could see that.
Now, we mentioned you had a really active intern, Jonah. Do you have an intern every year, or do you hope to get one for next summer? It seems like he did a lot.
Yes.
And again, you learn from each other. You never stop learning.
Absolutely. The only 2 years we haven't had an intern was obviously 2020, and then we didn't have any last year because at the time we were still under the governor mandate, so we weren't doing a lot of programming at the time, so we just thought there wasn't no point of having an intern if I wasn't doing a lot of programming. But then once the mandates went down, then we said, okay, we're going to have a new intern. So we've had one since I've started in 2015, 16, 17, 18, 19, and then this year. So
yeah, I think it's a chance to have a helper and someone who can learn. And
oh,
I mean,
yes.
What better way is there to learn about this? And maybe you decide as an intern, well, you're not really into it like you thought you were,
yeah,
which is fine. Or maybe you decide this is just it. Did you see that in Jonah? Do you see him having a job like yours in 10 years?
He wants to do something in veterinary science.
He seems really into it.
Oh, yes. He's really smart about reptile and reptile husbandry. I really will see him as an exotic vet, so dealing with reptiles, amphibians.
Yeah, it's hard to find. I mean, you see that on Facebook. It's, oh, I have a parrot. I have a sugar glider.
Do you really?
Or, well, not me. I mean, people saying that on Facebook.
Okay.
Or, you know, I have a python. Where would I find a veterinarian who does more than dogs and cats?
There's not a lot of them.
And so, yeah, definitely. It's an exciting field. And
yeah.
You talk about a job, James, that would give you a surprise every day.
Yeah.
Because when you ask your secretary, okay, who's the first patient? You never quite know which member of the animal kingdom it's going
to
be.
That's a good point to put, yeah.
Yeah, it might be, a little kitty cat, or just might be an albino python that somebody brought in from another city.
True.
So, absolutely. Yeah, I think what better way is there to learn and decide if that's a career path for you? Because, you know, veterinary school, it's not easy, it takes a while, and it's not cheap either.
No.
This is a good way to start.
Yeah.
James, here in Marion, it seems like we have for a county that doesn't have a tremendous population, we have quite a bit going on, a very active park district. For counties that are similarly sized in population, do we kind of beat them in terms of our resources, our programs, or do all the 88 counties have such an active park department like we have here?
Not all counties have one. Some have what's called the metro parks, which they combine like both county and city and everything together. Like usually your big metro areas, think of like Columbus, Cleveland, Toledo. But some other park districts, like the Delaware County Park District, I will admit theirs is fabulous. I mean, they do a lot of great programming, conservation work. I would love to see us be like that one day. But yeah, we're relatively small. To compare it to some of our other park districts around here. But I think we do a decent amount.
And we have a lot of interest.
Yeah.
It's quality as well as the quantity.
Yeah.
And again, with your being so active on social media, I mean, we announce it here at the station.
And we appreciate it, yes.
It's hard not to know what's going on.
Yeah.
And it's for all ages. This is not something for grade school kids.
Yeah.
70, 80-year-old people can benefit and can learn.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
And we... That's one of the great things about it. You never stop learning. If you're alive, you're learning.
Yeah.
But when it comes to our natural environment, the birds, the reptiles, the plants, every day can be a learning experience. Now, again, you brought in that monarch butterfly.
I did.
Now on the endangered species list. So that would mean that it's no longer okay or legal to catch one unless it's already deceased.
Yeah,
it's not legal to catch one and mount it somewhere.
You know, that is a good point, because I've had some people ask me about that, or the whole raising the monarch caterpillars. Right now, there's no regulations, but if their populations do decline more, and once they become a federally endangered species, then yes, unfortunately... I think there will be regulation of, you know, people keeping them or putting them for insect collections, or raising the baby monarch caterpillars and then releasing them later. So it's going to be interesting when that comes about.
So that would be if it's a federally protected.
Yeah.
A praying mantis often comes up. Those are federally protected, I believe.
Some are, yes.
Because I remember when I was a kid, we would see them and we're not allowed to do anything with them. We'd admire them because they're very unique looking.
Oh, they are.
You must leave them alone.
Yeah.
Of course, weeds come up, James, all the invasive weeds, and people like myself with hay fever, what makes you sneeze and what doesn't. And
ragweed.
Weed is a tricky word to define. Of course, we have the colloquial definition. We won't get into that. But a weed is essentially a plant that you don't want. And dandelions, I mean, you can eat them. You know, they are attractive. They're just aggressive. But, you know, people make juice out of them. You can eat them. They're actually pretty healthy.
And they are.
If they're growing in your yard as a weed, can't beat the price, which is nothing. You brought some milkweed.
I did.
And is that one of the invasive species?
Nope, it is a common.
Okay.
So now, I do want to mention that, yes, you may have some native species or which are called aggressive. So that means that, yes, they're indigenous to the area, but they can overcrowd against other native plants. Now, this is a host plant for a monarch. So if you're not familiar with host plant, it means that the butterfly needs this to land her eggs. So then once they transform into the caterpillar stage, they have to have this particular plant. It's just how they co-evolve with one another for many, many, many years. And if they don't have the host plant, then they can't transform into that next stage, that chrysalis or the cocoon stage, rather. You're talking from a butterfly to a moth to complete to the adult stage. So like for monarchs, it has to be milkweed. For other butterflies and moths, it may be generalist, so they can hit all different kinds of plants. There's some that only one, just one species of plant. So I always tell people the pickier they are, the more likely they are going to be endangered.
That would make sense.
Yeah.
Is the monarch, of course, everybody's familiar with, the orange and the black.
Yeah.
Of course, it kind of reminds me of the Bengals. Maybe that
it does.
That's why they're kind of colored like the Cincinnati Bengals, or Super Bowl runners up from the past Super Bowl. Maybe the winners this year. You never know.
It's actually from King Henry III from Europe, as who it was dedicated to, because he was named as the prince or the king of orange.
So. Talking with James Anderson, our official naturalist extraordinaire here in the Marion area. Adam on the Talking Place, WWGH Online Radio. And feel free to call with any questions, comments, complaints, suggestions. We would love to hear from you. I'm also doing a live video. Feel free to post a question or comment, again, under my live feed, under Adam Lepp. Or give us a ring here, 740-383-9944. About 18 minutes before the hour of one. Time is definitely flying. My mom said, time flies when you're having fun. I want to thank Duff for watching. He does have to depart, but thanks again. Hopefully the video of my somewhat smiling face wasn't too scary, but, you know, have a face for radio. That's all part of the fun. You know, we love butterflies, and, you know, moths and butterflies are similar.
Yes.
I mean, butterflies are the pretty ones, and moths we think of as eating clothing, but they don't all do that.
No.
What other butterflies are native to this area? And like the monarch, are they suffering decreasing numbers?
Basically, all butterflies are. But the other ones that are most common, like your swallowtails, there's about 10 or 12 different species of swallowtails in the area. The giant swallowtail is probably the second most popular one. What's really funny about that one, when it's scared, it looks like a snake flicking its tongue, but it actually secretes a smell, but it smells like rotten eggs. And then there's another butterfly that looks identical to the monarch, but has some different markings called a fissuroy, and it doesn't eat the milkweed, but it pretends it's the monarch, saying, hey, if you eat me, I'll make you sick, because if the predators eat monarch, because they eat the milkweed, it makes them sick. And then the caterpillar of the fissuroy looks like bird poop. So it's really interesting.
That is quite fascinating. Snakes do that, too. They pretend to be a different species. I've heard about that.
Some, like the eastern hognose snake, what they'll do when they're scared, they're like a cobra, they'll inflate their heads a little bit. And then if you keep pestering them, they'll play dead. Huh. And then some, like milk snakes, they'll rattle their tails. Now, they don't have a rattle at the end of their tail like rattlesnakes, but if it's in leaf litter, and especially if there's a lot of dry leaf litter, it does really sound like a rattlesnake.
Yeah, especially with the copperhead, they can look like other species, and there are some ways to tell. You look at the markings on the back.
Yeah.
And there's differences in the head. I've heard the venomous snakes have a stockier build.
Yeah.
And a garter snake, so they're kind of thin.
Yeah.
And with distinctive markings, the green, but it isn't necessarily consistent from one to another. And so it kind of takes an expert. And I've seen I thought it was Viceroy, but I guess it's Viceroy.
Tomato, tomato, yeah, however you pronounce it.
I think that's a brand of cigarettes also, but I don't know if it was named after the butterfly or where the name came from. They do look like monarchs, and just thinking about that. And it's hard to tell, but an expert would certainly be able to tell the difference. You know, the moths, James, are biologically similar to the butterfly, but they don't all eat clothing. They kind of get the bad rap, don't they? Then there are moths that are attractive.
Oh, yes.
I mean, the monarch butterfly, it's kind of hard to beat that, but there are moths that are easy on the eyes and not going to harm your clothing, despite the rap that they get.
Yes. The giant silk moths, those are the most beautiful ones, and we have a lot of them in our area here in Marion. We actually did a moth program at the end of July, and we got some interesting ones out there at Tallgrass Trail.
Yeah, you never quite know what you're going to see. And when you take a nature hike, James, you're going to be surprised. You're probably not going to see everything you were expecting, and you'll see things that you were not expecting.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all part of the fun. Do you think we're getting an early fall this year? It's hard to tell because it seems like June was so hot.
Yeah.
Then it was dry, and then it got a lot of rain, sometimes 3 or 4 inches at a time. So kind of a summer of extremes.
Yeah.
But I assume that will have an effect on the plants and the wildlife.
Oh, yeah.
As we enter the holiday season, the end of the year. Do you have any predictions as to maybe something about this coming cooler season that will be different or unique, worth watching versus previous years?
Well, if it's cooler, then some of our, like the leaves, will stay on clear up until November. We've had that happen in previous years. Like my family and I went to Hocking Hills, I want to say it was like 3 or 4 years ago, and there were still, the leaves were still just changing into that beautiful fall foliage. And usually that happens in October, not in November. So the cooler it is, it's kind of more a slow progress. But the warmer it is, it happens a lot faster.
So if it's cooler, we actually get the foliage at a different time frame.
Yeah, it lasts longer. Yeah.
Are the colors better? What needs to happen to get those beautiful colors that we all love to see when we cruise around forested areas?
So we need some rain. I mean,
we've had plenty of that.
Yeah, we need rain, but we need, I mean, kind of in between. We don't want too hot. We don't want too cold. So temperature rise, we probably would want between 50 to 60 degrees Fahrenheit. And then obviously as time progresses on, we want it to get cooler and cooler. And then finally, you know, the tree is going to let go of those leaves.
Now, I would say Mid-Ohio probably is not known as the area with the best foliage, if you think of New England.
Yeah.
Would that be correct, James? And what are the best parts of Ohio if you do want to watch foliage? And where should somebody take a road trip to?
Hocking Hills. It's number two in the nation.
So Hocking Hills, so that would be south of Logan, between Logan
and Athens.
That's not far at all. And that's went to college.
Yep.
That's actually number two. I didn't.
Yep, number two in the nation. Yep.
But number one would be northern New England,
yes.
Vermont, New Hampshire, that area.
Yep.
What is unique about Vermont and New Hampshire? And it seems like that's the road trip place if you want to see some gorgeous leaves. What is up with that area? And why, or other colder four season climates like North Dakota? Why is that not as palatable as northern New England?
I think it would have to do that it stays probably a little bit colder on the East Coast, especially them being right adjacent to the ocean. I would also say, too, the problem with out west is it's more spacious. And, you know, you don't see large clumps of forest a lot.
Okay, so it's out west. The plains and the mountains versus the forested area.
Yeah, it's more open in like Colorado, South Dakota, that area. Now, don't get me wrong, there are forests in those regions, but it's just not in large numbers as it would be here in Ohio or the eastern United States.
Giving you some tough questions. It's like a PhD thesis defense here. Okay, because I used to live in that area. That's where I went to college in northern New York. And there were always foliage reports, and you'd look out your window, even if it wasn't in the middle of the Green Mountains. It was beautiful, and it's just one of the marvels of nature.
Oh, it is.
And the leaves turn brown, and they fall down, and they come back in the spring. So we are rated number two then here in southeastern Ohio.
Yes.
Is there a particular area that you recommend? I mean, you're talking about a 1-2-hour road trip for this local area. Where should one go if one, bring your camera, but bring your phone, since that's now the camera.
Yeah.
If you want to see some fantastic foliage, and give us an idea of when the best time is to go.
If the weather is normal, we should say, I would head over there probably about early to mid-October. If the season's normal, by the time you get in the end of October, most of the leaves are gone. So, yeah, I would say early mid-October. And the areas I would check out, I mean, of course, the big Old Man's Cave, Ash Cave, Conco's Hollow, which is not part of the long trail, but it's separate. It's actually owned by the Ohio Division of Natural Preserves, but it's still part of that system. I highly, highly recommend it, especially they have a 3 or 4 mile like large loop trail up in the ridge, and you have to be careful because if you fall over, that's quite a drop down. A lot of people have passed away. So make sure that you know stay on the edge or the other side, not on the edge of the ridge.
That would be very good advice. We were talking about animals, not Homo sapiens. What kind of non-Homo sapiens animals would one find if one were to go to that area? We talked about the copperheads.
Yes.
You'll probably see a couple of them.
Oh, my goodness.
And anything else that you might not see in Mid-Ohio that you would want to take note of in the fall, early winter early winter season if you were to go to that area.
There's a lot of animals, but the one, and I'm not trying to scare anybody, but there are bears, there are black bears in that part of Ohio.
And we do have black bear. You hear about that, and you know, is it an urban legend? And it's like Ohio. I mean, there are rural parts, but you're never really more than an hour from a city.
Yeah.
But there are black bears.
Yes, and northeastern and southeastern Ohio, because they're coming from Pennsylvania and West Virginia.
That's fascinating. Now, the black bears, are they a danger? I mean, they're beautiful.
No.
But what's the deal with, you can't come up and pet them. I mean,
no.
They're not gentle like a deer.
No.
And they probably aren't quite as afraid of you as as a raccoon or a snake or a possum. So what do you do if you happen to see a bear roaming through the woods there in southeastern Ohio?
So when I was at Hawking College, before we went to Canada, because bears are like the deer down here, they're everywhere.
Yeah, that I know.
So we had to watch this video. It was called Woe Bear, and told us what we do if we ever encounter one. So the first thing, what you don't do, don't play dead, because that will tell the bear, hey, you're an easy for your meal. I'll take advantage of that. And don't run, because you will trigger predator-prey response. So what you do, and you always have to keep your eye on them, so back up and, you know, talk gently to them. Say, woe bear, and you slowly back up, usually about 10, 15 minutes-ish. If they don't leave you alone, get a little more aggressive, get a rock, get a stick, beat it on the ground, just look bigger. But if they do attack you, fight for your life. Punch, kick, scream, do whatever you can, because again, black bears like easy free meals. Now what they'll do,
I like easy free meals.
That's right. Is they'll start in the stomach area. So what they'll do, if they have you on the ground, keep flipping where your belly's on the ground. And eventually the bear will give up. Now grizzly bears, that's a different story. They're a lot more aggressive than black bears. Now luckily we don't have to worry about grizzly bears in Ohio.
Now, James, have you ever encountered a bear yourself?
Not here in Ohio.
It's always a question you ask a naturalist.
Yeah,
you know,
but
what animal has bitten you? What animals have you been? What animals do you have as pets? Okay, well, have you ever encountered a bear?
I certainly have.
Know what to do if you happen to see one.
I have. When I was at Hawking College up in Haliburton, Canada, which is 8 hours above Ontario, we've encountered a few black bears.
You obviously made it out okay.
Oh, right? We did.
You took your own advice. I mean, you're a tall guy.
Yeah.
Didn't realize how tall you were.
That's
until I saw you standing up at the fruitcake talk.
Yeah.
You're like 6'7". I mean,
6'5". But yeah,
you're not a small person. So
I look intimidating, I guess, to a bear.
maybe that helps.
Yeah.
So what happened though, in Canada?
So we had two encounters. One actually came to our campsite because we were in a very remote area. And so, but luckily there was like 20 of us, so, you know, we were acting big and scary, yelling, and it eventually ran away. The other one, we went to the local dump, and we had this little botanist teacher. She was really small, very scrawny little thing, and she let it get really, really close, almost as close to you and
very
I are.
Person.
And she finally said, oh, that's close enough. She had her little stick, and she said, get bear, get. It was quite fun. But we had a friend, he went out hiking around our campsite, and he encountered one, and he told us what he had to do, so.
Well, that was, I guess, a learning experience.
Oh, it was. Oh, I loved it.
You never really know until you encounter it on your own.
Yes.
But, you know, we do share the world with creatures.
We
some
do.
Friendlier than others, and they're all beautiful. I mean, bears are beautiful creatures.
They are.
I guess you don't really appreciate how big they are, and just don't, until you see them in live, you see them 3D. You can only get so much from a picture, and that's what's kind of cool about your line of work. So advice for those who are going to be visiting southeastern Ohio, but that would be the main issue, would be the bears.
Yeah, and just make sure, too, if you're doing a picnic, and if you know of bears in your area, have bear-proof baskets. Also, too, don't leave like a pizza or a hot dog in your car, because they have a really great sense of smell. And if you leave that in there, they have been known to open up car doors if it's unlocked or bust the window open. So they are powerful.
They are sneaky.
Yeah.
And they're smart, too. I guess that's part of it, too.
Smarter than your average bears.
Yeah, learned today, owls, they look smart. They're depicted as smart, but they're not.
Yeah.
And we knew that crows are fairly smart.
Yeah.
They have a good memory, and they're kind of spiteful, and we're aware of the intelligence of dogs and cats, often superior to their friends in the Homo sapiens realm. It's got a few minutes left here, James. We appreciate you being on with me today. Hopefully, I'm not disappointed. I'm sure I'm a very different type of host than Glenn or Charlie, but, you know, variety is the spice of life.
That's right. It sure is.
I've probably given you some questions that have tickled your brain, but yeah. That's all part of your job. I would think when you give these tours, you give these tall grass presentations, you got a lot of questions. I mean, you hear a lot of the same things over and over.
Yes.
I mean, again, probably about the snakes and, and about weeds and allergies, but...
Yeah.
Can you think of maybe the best question that someone has asked you this past year? Something that maybe was a stumper or just you felt was awfully creative?
I'll tell you a funny one. This summer, our outdoor kids program, I know you're not probably familiar, this is a little bird. It's called woodcock. It only stands about 3 or 4 inches tall. And it's a nocturnal bird, but sometimes they'll out during the day looking for food. Well, he was on the trail. And we were out on our hike after we did our activities, and the little kid said, "Mr. Anderson, is that a chicken?" And I had like, "What is that?" And I'm like, "Oh, that's a woodcock." He said, "Oh, yeah, that looked like a chicken." I just laughed. Because to him, and I know he was only 4 years old, but he just assumed all birds were chickens.
Do they look like chickens? Or they?
No, they have a long...
Because chickens, I mean, they can be different colors.
Yeah.
The roosters are... More colorful.
Yeah, they have a really long beak, and they have actually a special sensors at the end of the beak because they probe it into the ground and they can feel vibration.
So it's like a woodpecker, like Woody Woodpecker.
Kind of,
close
yeah.
To that.
Yeah, kind of. So, you ever heard of a snipe?
Wesley snipe.
Yeah, Wilson snipe. Which is a short bird. So, they're very similar.
So, if you do go on one of these hikes, and we encourage our listeners take advantage.
Yes.
These programs. We talk about them on the air. You can go to their Facebook page. It's very easy to learn about all these cool goings-on. You'll learn about wildlife that you may not have been aware of. People lived here, you know, half a century.
Yeah.
They not realize what we share our world with. And it is quite fascinating.
Yeah.
Because one final question, James. This is not a really hard question.
Right.
I know Scott's talked about this, and, you know, like many people around this area, I have hay fever and seasonal allergies. Was it an especially bad year for the seasonal allergies? Are we on a trend where it just gets worse every year? Or any thoughts on your end?
Weather is definitely a big factor. I noticed that the more rain we have, it controls the pollen, but then those drier, and then also too when we're really, really dry. But it's when we get those periods where it rains a little, but not as dry, and that's when the pollen just goes crazy.
Yeah, so it's something is a function of the weather.
Yeah.
And thankfully, we have lots of different over-the-counter medications to help quench these problems. And we also appreciate, James, that we're in a four-season climate.
Yes.
You know, it's nice to be in Florida or Hawaii where it's summer every day. But you appreciate the warmer weather and the snowmelt more when you live in this part of the country. And we like the variety. You probably feel the same way.
Oh, yeah.
You like the variety of all the different seasons. And in your line of work, if every day is the same, there's not as much to talk about.
Yeah.
And especially even microclimatic, where you planned an event in a week, and, well, there were 4 inches of rain somewhere between the planning day and the day that the event occurs. And that certainly affects what you're going to see.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's all part of... That's all part of the fun.
Yeah.
So again, we got about 45 seconds here, James. Remind us quickly how to get in touch with the Park District and how to find out about all the great things that you folks do.
Yeah, so social media is probably going to be the best aspect, so Marion Tallgrass Trail or the Marion County Park District Facebook page. Also, too, we're on Instagram, and we just got on Twitter, so I started that a couple weeks ago. So, but then we do have a phone number, 740-223-4161. That's the county office. At our building over there. So.
Well, thank you very much, James Anderson with the Marion County Park District, our official naturalist and commentator on flora and fauna. He is with us on the fourth Thursday of every month on my show, WWGH Talk Radio.